Om Gyanatamyananda Sya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksusamilatan Jaina Tasmai Sri Girave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sa Pandantikam. How is it possible for us to understand the separation experienced by the Brijbasis when Krishna left Vrindavan? Of course, in reality, we can never understand this unless we have a parallel amount of Krishna consciousness, or an amount of Krishna consciousness parallel and in the same mood to what they have. But to give us some idea, in the nyaya called Chandra Sakanyaya, where one says the moon is just over the branch of that tree. And of course, we know that the moon isn't above the branch because the moon is so much further away. But this gives us an idea, a direction to look in when we are trying to understand that moon, or in this particular case, trying to understand something, get a glimpse into a drop of the ocean of separation from Krishna. I wonder if Brijbasis have volume controls that you can turn down. Jayanto! Prabhu! Tora Shanti! So, I found these mundane quotations about love in separation. And it's and when Mahaprabhu, when he was at Rath Yatra, he took something, a verse from mundane literature, and found in that the essence of the mood of Rath Yatra, and he composed his own verse in parallel to that, or Rupa Goswami actually composed the verse that showed that he understood the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the separation he was experiencing and then expressing. But listen to this, quite interesting, because this is on the mundane level, but does it sound familiar about the spiritual level? Because after all, the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. This is from one poet. Your absence has gone through me, or feeling separation. It has gone through me like a thread through a needle. Everything I do is stitched with its color. Another one. Thou art gone from my gaze like a beautiful dream, and I seek thee in vain. I seek thee but cannot find thee by the meadow and stream. Looking everywhere. This is actually the mood in the mundane world, or in the spiritual world that Prabhupada was speaking about. That search for Krishna, he radhe brajadeva ke chalalite. And instead of searching for Krishna everywhere and making that the essence of our life, we try to find satisfaction or fill up the emptiness, which is really can only be filled by Krishna. We try to fill that emptiness in the land of shadows, in the land of reflections, in the land of mundane love. But its essence, its perfection is in Krishna. This sounds amazingly like the Shikastakam. Love considers hours as months and days as years, and every little absence is an age. What verse? Yugayitam Nameshena. And this one is especially the mood of the Braja Gopikas or Nanda Maharaj. He says the same thing. To die and part is less evil But to part and live there is the torment. Another one. Ever absent, ever near, still I see thee, still I hear, yet I cannot reach thee, dear. So this mood of I want to be with Krishna, my beloved. He is part of me, actually. He is the part that's missing. And this one is very instructive. The final one. Absence diminishes little passions and increases great ones, as the wind extinguishes a candle and fans a fire. So we see this in an unfortunate way, that because we cannot find Krishna so easily, we are like a candle, and the intensity of our desire to be with Krishna tends to get extinguished, and we fill our life with countless other little insignificant and useless things that waste our life. We fill our life with distractions, with long lists of things that we have to do. But when we finish the list, what will we do? First of all, the list never finishes because we're expert at adding more things to that list. But what is it that we really have as the necessity of life, the prayojana? Prayojana means, it means the goal, the perfection, but it means the necessity. What is the actual necessity of our life? And so much of the preaching, the mood of preaching that Prabhupada had was use human life properly. It's such a rare opportunity. But it's a rare opportunity for what? To develop, to awaken, to revive, to fan into a blazing fire our relationship with Krishna. That is the purpose of life. And it's very difficult to maintain that focus for me, because the tatra loyam api mulam ekalam, because the intense attachment, the intense desire isn't there. And the purpose of this retreat, the purpose of every retreat, the purpose of our japa, the purpose of our reading, the purpose of our association, the purpose of our going to see the deities in the temple, the purpose of our reading of the Bhagavatam, is this and this alone. Prema pamarto mahan. It is to bring into a blazing fire, either quickly or slowly, but bring into a blazing fire that desire, that necessity, that I have to develop my relationship with Krishna. Now, this doesn't mean that I'm in this situation right now, and sometimes some fire of desire appears in my heart when the association is proper, when the place is proper, when we're sitting under the shelter of Giriraj or in the valley of Giriraj, and the desire, yes, it comes to my heart. I want to advance. I must advance. So do we then just go like this and throw away the rest of our life? Well, the reality is most of us cannot, we can go like this, but in a few days or weeks or months, we'll end up going like this again. And what I saw with Srila Prabhupada was that he wanted devotees to be in a situation where they could be steady and move forward gradually or quickly, but in a proper situation that was steady for them, that they can maintain and move forward. And as long as a person is moving forward, He's doing well. That's a teacher's definition of whether a student is doing well. If he's moving forward, he or she is moving forward. So that is what we want to do. Especially, we don't want to go back. If we're moving forward, we are doing well. And if the desire, the material desires in our heart are lessening and our spiritual desires are increasing, we're doing well. And if at some point, by Krishna's arrangement, he opens the door that, yes, walk through it fully, then we can take that. And by the time, before the time comes when we will leave this world or leave the bodies that we happen to inhabit at this particular point, we want our relationship with Krishna to be developed enough that we can hold on to him so tightly when that most difficult of times appears, the time of death. We can call out to him, Krishna, Krishna, I am yours. With great love. Krishna, you have been my shelter in life, and you are my shelter now. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Go to Krishna. Go to Vrindavan. Go to join Krishna. And of course, if our relationship is really developed and our desires are very focused, that's so wonderful, but no artificialness. Just move forward. That's what we want to do. Keep good association. Keep satam prasangam mama virya samvido. Hear Krishna katha in good association. Serve Srila Prabhupada and the great devotees who have taken up the mission of spreading the holy names of Krishna all over the world. So, going back to our direct topic over here, when Uddhav sees the intense longing in Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, or we could better say the intense absorption due to their loving relationship with Krishna that Nanda and Yashoda have, that they only see one thing. And wherever they look, they only see that one thing or that one person. That one person is their son, beloved son. And when Uddhava sees the intensity and focus like a laser of their absorption on Krishna, he's thinking, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. The perfection that they have achieved is the perfection. I have never seen anything comparable to this. So he tells them, what more could be required of you to do? You've already reached the perfection. You're absorbed fully in the absolute truth. He's looking at it somewhat from the point of view of Krishna's Aishwarya, that he is the absolute truth. He's all-powerful. He's Lord Narayan. And they know this, but the power of their madhurya, the sweet power of their relationship with Krishna, it moves aside like a strong hurricane, moves aside big trees and obstacles, or really Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, the example that Srila Sukadeva Goswami gives is how the Ganga moves aside everything at its source, Tivrena. So in a similar way, if one performs bhakti yoga with tivra, with power, then all obstacles are removed. So for them, conscious awareness or a dominance of Krishna's opulence and power, it's an obstacle to the intimacy of their relationship and taking care of Krishna, because they're thinking of Krishna. If we don't feed Krishna, what's going to happen to him? And Mother Yashoda is continuously just thinking, oh, he looks so thin. We heard that in the Govardhan Leela, that Krishna is holding up the hill. Everyone's amazed. And Mother Yashoda is in anxiety. He's looking thin. when the bridge buses, when Krishna shows the bridge buses Goloka, but an aspect of Goloka where all the demigods are praising Krishna, and he shows that to the cowherd men, and the cowherd men look at Krishna, and the demigods are praising little boy Krishna, and immediately they want to run to him and embrace him, because that's the nature of their relationship. It's just overpowering affection. And Krishna wants to run to them and sit upon their laps and hug them. But he's restrained by the demigods in their prayers. And the gopas, they feel restrained also by the demigods in their praying. So an unrestrained, obstacle-free path of Krishna consciousness comes by the increase of our desire. And the perfection of this, of course, again, is Nanda Yashoda and ultimately the Braja Gopikas. So Uddhava continues to speak to Nanda Yashoda. He's amazed and he's praising them. So in the 34th verse, he sees that despite him telling them, you're so fortunate due to how much you love Krishna, you don't understand it, but you've reached the perfection of samadhi, that the sages sitting in the Himalayas in mountain caves performing pranayama and meditating for thousands and thousands and thousands of years to focus their consciousness on the absolute truth, they haven't reached anywhere near an intensity of focus, anywhere near the intensity of focus that you have achieved. So you are the most fortunate, but they are not satisfied. They are not peaceful. So therefore he speaks to them. He says, infallible Krishna, Achyuta, the Lord of the devotees, he will soon return to Braja. He will soon return to Braja to satisfy his parents. If you tell a child, who's sitting in the class, don't worry, don't move around, it'll soon be over. Because the children don't have a sense of time. For them, soon it could mean 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years, it could mean, or 2 minutes. It's in one sense, it's the same for them. Because they don't have that concept of time. So when the intensity of Nanda and Yashoda's wanting to be with Krishna is so great, and they hear infallible Krishna, Achyuta, who keeps his vows. And we'll come to this a little bit later, even more directly. He doesn't fail in his promise. And he has promised you, I will return just as soon as I finish this business. So he will soon return to Braja to satisfy his parents. The word soon return is like a sword thrust in the heart of Nanda and Yashoda. Rather than being satisfied, it is the cause of their pain. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, or perhaps Srila Jiva Goswami, I think it's Vishwanath. This is his comment on this verse. Oh, dear Uddhava, after hearing this, this is the mood of Nanda and Yashoda. I've heard you are so intelligent, but now I see that you are foolish because you have praised us. Oh, who there in the three worlds is more unfortunate than us? From whose house such a wonderful son has gone away. We are the objects of scorn for all. Anticipating this statement, Uddhava, he speaks this verse. Don't worry, A tutor who does not fall from his vow will very soon come to Braja, and he will remain here, and he will fulfill all your desires. So is this going to satisfy them? It isn't. He continues, having killed Kamsa, the enemy of all the Yadus, in the wrestling arena, Krishna will now surely fulfill his promise to you. He will come back. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that Krishna is actually already fulfilling his promise in the Uppercut Leela. And because they are missing him so deeply, they are simultaneously, inconceivably feeling separation in the Prakat Leela, the manifest Leela, and experiencing continuous association with him in the Uppercut Leela. Someone. He will surely fulfill his promise to you by coming back. He had said, he told Nanda Maharaj after the killing of Kamsa, Nanda Maharaj met Krishna. Krishna left the city of Mathura to meet with Nanda Maharaj because Vasudev, Devaki, they were always, and all the relatives of Krishna, they were keeping him continuously busy. Oh, now we're having a wedding over here, you know, go come over here, this one wants to meet you, that one wants, you haven't seen them for so long, you meet this one, you come for lunch, come to my house for lunch, the whole thing. They were continuously keeping him busy. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that Nanda Maharaj was living right outside of the city of Mathura, and none of the Mathura Vasis, the Yadus, came and visited him. None of them treated him with any respect and offered him any hospitality. And Krishna, they kept him busy, and Balaram, they kept him busy, because they were embarrassed to stand in front of Nanda, because they could not, would not let Krishna go, and they wouldn't let Krishna come and see him by keeping him busy, a little indirect, because they knew that that Krishna's love for them was so great that if he went to see them once, it would be gone. This also happened when, after the killing of Salva, does anyone know what chapter that is in the 10th canto? It's very close to the end of the 10th canto. I think it's in the 86th and the 87th chapter of the 10th canto. And then Krishna killed Salva, and right outside Dwarka. And then the message came that Dantavakra and his brother, Vidurat, that they had attacked Mathura because they wanted to fight with Krishna. So usually, Krishna would have gone into the city of Dwarka, taken permission from Ugrasena, taken permission from Vasudeva and Devaki, and then gone out to defeat the enemies. But he knew that neither Ugrasena, Vasudev, or Devaki would ever let him go near Mathura, because right across the river was Vrindavan. And they feared that if he ever went to Vrindavan again and saw the residents of Vrindavan, Nanda, Yashoda, Sudam, Sridam, Srimati Radharani, the other gopis, that he probably would never return. So they would never give him permission. So there's that common saying now that it's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. So Krishna just left and he went to Mathura. He didn't ask for permission. He went to Mathura. And then after killing Dantavakra and Vidurat, he crossed the river Yamuna with his chariot even, and he put on the clothes of a cowherd boy again. Everything. And then he stayed with the residents of Vrindavan for 2 months, 2 or 3 months, before winding up the Brajalila completely and taking everyone home. So he will surely, so at that time, Krishna promised promised Nanda Maharaj. They had an intimate discussion, and Krishna promised Nanda Maharaj, Vodrastam Eshyamana, after finishing this business, I will come to see you. I will come to see you. So Krishna will now surely fulfill his promise to you by coming back. O most fortunate ones, and here's where it starts really getting interesting, where the heart of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda is revealed and how they look at things. O most fortunate ones, do not lament, they say. You will see Krishna again very soon. There's another part of the verse. And that other part is, shouldn't take away the emphasis from this part right now. O most fortunate ones, do not lament, because they were enwrapped, entranced. That's a better word for it. They were entranced in a focused, full, conscious meditation simply on Krishna, caused by their missing him. They were seeing him everywhere. They were immobile. They couldn't do anything. Do not lament. So Uddhava was trying to give them hope, but he was dealing far beyond anything he had experienced before. So the kind of hopes that he was trying to give them, the consolation to their hearts that he was presenting to them, was nothing. Painful even. And then the second part of the verse, he will say, which he'll say, he is present in the hearts of all living beings, just as fire lies dormant in wood. So he says he'll come back. But then he starts talking philosophy to them, explaining, he's your son, okay, but he's the Paramatma in everyone's heart, and he's already present everywhere. We'll read the comment of Srila Jiva Goswami, a part of it, and then read the full comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which is quite revelatory. Srila Jiva Goswami says, hearing Uddhava say, very soon, you will see Krishna again very soon. Yashoda glanced at Uddhava. Now, Srila Jiva Goswami, at least in the translation that I have, it doesn't describe the nature of that glance, but it must have been very powerful. The glance of a broken heart. They could not tolerate those words very soon. Uddhava then began to teach them in the usual way, preach to them basically, in the usual way we preach to people to remove their lamentation. We give them some philosophy anyway, everyone must die, things come and go in this world. So he says, Paramhatma invisibly exists in all beings, and Krishna is already near you, invisibly. You see him also through your mind, And very soon you will see him with your very eyes. It wasn't enough. But listen to what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where he takes this verse and reveals or gives us a glimpse within the drop of the ocean of separation. This is his comment. Oh, so great is our misfortune that there is delay in our truthful son coming to Braja. To answer the lamenting parents, Uddhava replies with this verse, you should not lament. You should not lament. Very soon you'll be able to see Krishna. And Nanda Maharaj replies, you say that we will see him, but when will that be? Tomorrow? The next day? Or 10 days later? With some consolation, we will keep our life heirs from leaving our bodies till that day. But if he's not coming, you should tell us truthfully, as it's so difficult to prevent the life heirs from leaving, we will then let them go. Uddhava, hearing Nanda speak like this, Krishna was everything to them. He began to consider, one should advise those who are suffering separation from their material sons in this way. Why are you immersed in the illusion of family attachment like this? False attachment to wife and sons is the cause of trouble. Give that up and become attached to the Lord. But how can I advise Nanda like this? For he is attached to the Lord as his son. He's not even like Vasudev, whose attachment to Krishna weakens on seeing the godly powers of his son. Rather, by showing Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mata Krishna's powers, their attachment to Krishna increases. They will think, when parents lose sight of their son playing in their house, they die out of sorrow. By our good fortune, the Lord himself plays about our house as our son in our own house. But if we cannot care for him for even a moment, we lament. How will we live not seeing that child in our house? We are so unfortunate, having been separated from such a wonderful child. This is how Nanda and Yashoda feel. So Uddhava began to further consider, if I go to Mathura and bring Krishna here tomorrow, Jarasandha will come and destroy Mathura, angry because Kamsa's wives have been left as widows. Who then will protect Vasudev and the other Yadus? If Krishna again, he's in Vrindavan, and if he again goes to Mathura to protect them, then certainly everyone in Braja will die. If I tell the Brijbasis that Krishna will come in 4 or 5 years, they cannot remain patient for that long. If I lie and tell them that he will come in 4 or 5 days, when that time expires and they discover that I lied, they will die. As there is no other means, I will weaken their relationship with him. I will weaken their prema. I will weaken their love for him. I will tell them that as the super soul, Krishna is everywhere and he is neutral. He is neutral to everyone. And as impersonal Brahman, he is without relationships. He has no father. He has no mother. He has no body. He has no karma. He has no birth. And I will teach them meditation on the soul to realize this. I will weaken their prema. That is his strategy. He could not find another way to succeed to keep them alive. But he's very intelligent. And he says, if on revealing all this, and it's true, Krishna is the Super Soul. Brahmeti, Paramatmakti, Bhagavaniti, Sabyate. He is the Super Soul. He is everywhere in all things. It's true. But prema is very mysterious. It is the truth within truth. But if after revealing this, after preaching to them, Nanda and Yashoda's unlimited, unfathomable, uncontrollable prema, if it increases even more, then I will go to Mathura. And I will simply glorify their incomparable prema again and again in the assembly of Krishna, Vasudev, Ugrasena, and astonish them all. Having thus decided to weaken the prema of Nanda and Yashoda, Uddhava began by speaking about Krishna as the Super Soul. Like fire within wood, Krishna is present within the hearts of all living beings. Just as fire within wood is not visible without friction, you have to take the different woods and rub them together so it begins to smoke and smolder, and then flame comes from it. Krishna is not visible without devotion. This is what Nanda Maharaj heard from that verse. He is present in the hearts of all living beings just as fire lies dormant in wood. Hearing that friction is required, and friction is really rasa. There has to be some tension. We tend to, when we come to Krishna consciousness and are very young, when we come and we think that it's going to bring us great peace. And if you go, sometimes you see when you go to Delhi, and near the Delhi temple, they have these vans, and on the vans that distribute Bhagavad Gita, it says, read Bhagavad Gita for an anxiety-free life. And I think they must be reading a different version than I'm reading. And Sachinanda was, what is that quotation that you always say, that Prabhupada said? When someone asked him, how do you become Krishna conscious, something? Yes, by your anxiety. I want Krishna. I want to serve Krishna. I want to please Krishna. Yes, Maharaj. A devotee asked Prabhupada, how can I know when I'm advancing? How much anxiety? How advanced we are. But to please Krishna, with Krishna in the center. So, Nanda Maharaj, hearing, so we tend to think, we tend to want Shantaras, just everything, just peaceful. But look at Nanda and Yashoda, and listen to how they heard these words about the Super Soul that Uddhava had spoken. Hearing this, Nanda and Yashoda thought, Uddhava is a little indirectly telling us that if we do not perform devotional activities as Vaishnavas do for Krishna, our son, why should he appear in our house? Somehow or another, Krishna must again appear in our house. We must perform devotional service. This is how they prosecute Krishna consciousness. There's one verse in the Padyavali, I don't have it with me, where Krishna at Kurukshetra is standing before Srimati Radharani, and he feels so apologetic because he has not communicated with the Brijbasis directly with them. He has not reciprocated their love. He has not come back. He's left them. So he's bowing down to Srimati in an apologetic mood. And Srimati Radharani's mood is saying, no, no, no. You are our Swami. You are our master. You are our husband. What you do is correct. But what it means is that we did not have enough love to attract you. It is only my fault. It is not your fault. You are faultless. It is my lack of love, and that is all. So Nanda Maharaj is thinking in this incredible way. Uddhava has just told him that your absorption is unparalleled. You are the most fortunate. You've reached the highest achievement possible in existence. And they're saying, Uddhava, we thought you were intelligent, but we let him go. And Krishna always goes, and this will come up again in another amazing purport by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of the most amazing. He says that Krishna always goes where there is devotion. And the fact that he is not here means that we have no devotion. So let us now perform devotional service with actual devotion. Let us have bhakti. So in the next verses, from 37 to 43, that's seven verses, Uddhava preaches to Nanda and Yashoda, and he gives them philosophy. He gives them philosophy about Brahman and Paramatma, saying who Krishna is. And his attempt is to lessen their prema. So please hear this philosophy. For us, it is helpful. For them, it is like a drop of water thrown against that volcano of love. Means nothing. So Uddhava, for him, for Krishna, no one is especially dear or despicable or undear. Basic Bhagavad Gita preaching. No one is superior or inferior, samoham sarvabhuteshu, and yet he is not indifferent to anyone. He is free from all desire for respect, and yet he gives respect to others. He has no mother, he has no father, no wife, no children or other relatives, and no one is related to him. And yet, no one is a stranger to him. He knows everyone. He's talking like this because he's seeing what he's saying doesn't reduce their prema. So no one is actually Krishna's mother. No one, he's eternal. He's the Supreme Lord, the source of everyone. Aham eva sameva gre nanyat yat sada sat param. He has no mother, no father, no wife, no children or other relatives. No one is related to him. No one is a stranger to him. He has no material body. He has no birth. How could you be his mother? How could you be his father? He has no work to do in this world. Now, he's not only the super soul, but he's an avatar. Be aware of this when you're dealing with him. He has no work to do in this world that would oblige him to take birth in a pure, impure, or mixed species of life, goodness, passion, and ignorance. He has nothing to do with the modes of nature. Yet to enjoy his pastimes, it's all lila for him. And to deliver his saintly devotees, yada yada hi dhammasya glanir bhavati bharata, he manifests himself for that reason. He performs his pastime. This is all his pastime. Smile. Although beyond the three modes of material nature, he's not affected by goodness, passion, ignorance. Because someone may ask the question, then why? So he doesn't suffer joy or anything like that. Other people are suffering and enjoying. So he is beyond the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. The transcendental Lord accepts association with them just indirectly as his play. Thus the unborn Supreme Lord utilizes the material modes to create, maintain, and destroy. Again, a Bhagavad Gita class. And an example of the illusory energy now, because under the modes of material nature, everyone thinks themselves, kartaham iti manyate, that I'm the one doing it. So, but it's actually Krishna and his empowering, daivya shagunamayi, he's empowering these modes of material nature to control everything in this world. He's preaching to them. Just an example of how the illusory energy causes us to see things improperly. Just as a person who is whirling around perceives the ground to be turning, one who is affected by false ego, thinks himself the doer, when actually only his mind is acting. And if you actually think of him, conceive of this Krishna who is the super soul, who is an avatara, who is the supreme Brahman, if you actually think of him as your son, you should know that the Supreme Lord Hari, this is text 42, is certainly not your son alone. Rather, being the Lord, he's the son, he's the soul, he's the father, he's the mother of everyone. And not only is the son and the father and the mother of everyone, he is everything. Nothing can be said to exist independent of Lord Achyuta, coming back to his name as Achyuta because he's infallible, that he will return. Nothing seen, nothing heard, nothing in the past, present, or future, nothing moving or unmoving, nothing great or small, nothing is independent of him. He is indeed everything. He is the Supreme Soul. So in this way, all night long, because Uddhava came just at dusk, the cows are returning, and no one noticed his entry into Vrindavan because of the dust of the cows, and he went unnoticed into Vrindavan. And then he met Nanda Maharaj, and they spoke, and he spoke philosophy to Nanda Maharaj, hour after hour after hour. And while Krishna's messenger continued speaking with Nanda, the night ended. Now, there are some more verses in this chapter, and these verses introduce us to the second part of Uddhava's mission, and that's to meet the Braja Gopikas. But first, I'll read you the comment of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this section. Nanda and Uddhava, please listen carefully. Nanda and Uddhava spent the night in discussing amongst themselves. Uddhava was not able to pacify them, however, and they could not accept his advice. Then Nanda began to consider things in this way. Again, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is going to open up the heart of Nanda Maharaj, and he invites us to understand the heart of a devotee, a Brijbasi devotee. Nanda's thinking. Uddhava wants to enlighten us by saying that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Do we not know that? At the time of his name-giving ceremony, we heard from Gaga Rishi, this son of yours is similar to Narayan. Narayan, O Samoganai. Except for Narayan, who could be similar or equal to him? Therefore, from Gaga, we knew that our son is Narayan. We also realized our son to be Narayan because he killed Putana, he killed Agasura, he killed Baka, and when he lifted Govardhan, he quelled the forest fire. And when the ruler of Varuna Loka offered respects to him, we know that he's the Supreme Lord. And we also know that Narayan is Paramatma and Parambrahman. Though we know that, we also know without a doubt that he is our son. The proof of that, that he is our son, the Gaga Charja said, Nanda Natmat. Atman, Nanda Atman Rido Yamte, Gagacharya said, this son of yours. So we know that he's the Lord, but he is our son. We also know that. From Gaga's words, though it is proved that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, when we treat him without reverence, we offer him our chewed betel nuts. Satisfaction appears in our minds. And if he were not our son, we feel so much pleasure when we offer him the remnants from our mouths. And if he were not our son, we would not feel that satisfaction. Before Krishna's birth, we would meditate on Narayan, our family deity. But now, as soon as we meditate on Narayan, Narayan, Krishna, appears directly in front of us. This is a sign that our mind is feeling satisfaction. Therefore, acting like this in our relationship to our son is not a fault. We are certainly Krishna's mother and father. And Krishna's own realization of this is also a proof. We have seen many times that if we do not give him our chewed betel nuts, if we don't take him onto our lap and embrace him, if we do not hold him to our chest, if we do not kiss him, his face becomes sad. If Yashoda was not his mother, how could she tie him up when he broke the yogurt pots? And seeing his miserable face when he was tied up, I released him. And I saw that he became pleased. Because we are his mother and father, he accepted scolding, commands, and bondage even, being tied up. Even though he may be the Supreme Lord, how is it possible to bind up the Parambrahma, the Supreme Lord? Now there's more to this purport, but I wanted to just speak a little bit, one pastime that is very, very intimate of Krishna dealing with Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda just after Yashoda Maya bound him up. And when we understand the kind of relation, the way that they deal, and how Krishna steals the hearts and makes the waves of their ecstasy overflood the banks, we remember how difficult it is to be separate from Krishna. So after Yashoda Maya tied up Krishna, and why did she tie him up as a punishment? Because she was afraid, because he's such a restless boy. If you punish me, I'll run away and I won't come back. I'll go into the forest. Mother Yashoda became afraid. So she tied him up to the wooden grinding mortar. And she took different boys and put them on all sides and said, you make sure that there is no more trouble, that he has no difficulty. And Krishna at this time is just crying and crying and crying because he has been tied up. And then as soon as Mother Yasoda leaves to attend to her household duties, Krishna begins laughing. And he begins playing with his friends. And then he begins pulling on the rope. And the grinding mortar starts moving. And they're laughing. The boys are laughing and playing. Or even before that, Krishna is crying. And Balaram comes. And Balaram, seeing Krishna tied up, becomes furious. Who has tied you? Who has dared to do this? I will crush them. I will bring the universe down upon them. Who has done this? Who has done this to you? He says, Krishna says, Mother Yashoda. And Balaram says, oh no. And then he begins, why are you always stealing? Why are you stealing? You get yourself into so much trouble because he couldn't unbind those ropes. Because those ropes were they were composed of the affection of Mother Yashoda, and it was so powerful and unbreakable that even Balaram could not untie them. So then Balaram leaves and Krishna starts dragging the mortar this way and this way and that way. And he drags it to one of the houses of the gopis. And it's sometimes said when Mother Yashoda was looking for more rope to tie up Krishna, she was saying, she used first the rope that used to bind her hair and used that. And she asked the other ladies, please bring me some more rope. I have to find out the limit of this boy's waist. Because inconceivably his waist doesn't grow and the rope is always too short by the same amount. I have to find out the limit of this. So she asked all the ladies to start bringing rope from their house. And all the ladies who had donated rope to Mother Yashoda, Krishna dragged the mortar to their houses and had the boys steal butter from their houses. This way and this way and this way and this way. He's so naughty. And then he saw the Jamalarjuna trees. And when Krishna does something, he does many things with one act. So we know he dragged the mortar between the two trees. And then he kept pulling on the mortar. And these huge trees, ancient huge trees, crashed down to the ground, making such a loud sound that all the residents of Vrindavan for 48 minutes, one muhurta, they fell down to the ground and faint, fearful because of the sound, and fearful because could this be another calamity that has attacked our Krishna? So while they were in faint, the cowherd boys, those four or so cowherd boys who were with Krishna, they didn't faint because they were witnessing the sweetness of Krishna's pastime and they were observing it, but they couldn't move. They remained stunned. But they saw Manigriva Nalakuvera come out of the trees as two shining entities and offer prayers to Krishna, and then they left. And then that took the one muhurta. And then all the Brijbasis awoke, and they came running, following the sound. They saw the two trees had fallen, and they surrounded the two trees and pushed the branches away. Nanda Maharaj was there. He pushed the branches away, and he saw that Krishna was beneath the branches, tied up. And Nanda Maharaj, untied Krishna, who was crying and crying and crying and crying, and Nanda Maharaj smiled, even though it was such a dangerous situation. From his point of view, the trees had fallen, almost crushing Krishna. Still he smiled because he wanted to relieve the boy's anxiety if he was thinking he was in a dangerous situation. And he held Krishna and he said, "Oh, Krishna, who tied you up like this?" And Krishna said, "No, who tied you up? Who did this to you? Krishna, who tied you up?"
"Yashoda Ma."
Well, not such a... crying and crying and holding on to his father. And Yashoda had come, and she was in complete anxiety. And Nanda Maharaj looked at her. "You've caused this?" "To our boy?" And Krishna's holding on tightly. The angel halo is, you know, shining brightly on his head. "Me? I never." And Yashoda felt so bad, she ran into the house. And she lied down on the ground and was just crying and crying. She wouldn't eat. She wouldn't do anything but cry. Then Nanda Maharaj said to Krishna, "Do you want me to hit her?" And Krishna said, "No, no, no." Crying and crying and crying. He said, "Come with me." So Krishna and Balaram and Nanda Maharaj, they went to the Yamuna River at that time, and they bathed and they played in the Yamuna River, and then they went to where it was time for milking the cows. So Nanda Maharaj was supervising the milking of the cows, and he took some, he got milk and he put rock sugar in the milk, because Krishna was still drinking the milk of his mother at that time. So Nanda Maharaj gave him some sweetened milk, and Krishna was right from the cows, and Krishna was drinking that and eating the sugar candy. Then they went to lie down in Nanda's house on a bed, and Nanda Maharaj taught Krishna and Balaram some of the letters of the alphabet. And Rohini Devi came, because she had been with Yashoda, and Yashoda was in such misery. So she went in front of Nanda and Krishna and Balaram, and she said, "Mother Yashoda, she's suffering so much," to Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj said, "Well, if someone gets angry, they should be repentant about their anger." And then Rohini said to Krishna, "You should go to your mother. She's suffering." And Krishna said, "No, I won't go to her. I'll just stay with Father." And she held Nanda Maharaj. Krishna held Nanda Maharaj more tightly. "But who will you play with if you just stay with your father?" I'll play with Dao. I'll play with the elder brother. "How will you eat if you just stay with your father?" "I'll eat sweetened cow milk if I stay with my father." Then Rohini thought, "Balaram, you bring him to me, and we'll bring him to Mother Yashoda." So Balaram went to Krishna and held his hand, and Krishna went and just held his father more tightly. And then Krishna was holding his father and crying and feeling sorry for himself. And Nanda Maharaj, of course, knew that Krishna had so unlimited love for Mother Yashoda. So he said to Krishna, "Krishna, you know that if Mother Yasoda doesn't see you, and if you remain angry at her, she's going to... And he didn't say it, but he indicated she will die. And then immediately, Krishna started crying, "Oh, my, oh, mother, oh, mother, oh, mother." And he immediately ran to Mother Yasoda, and he embraced her. And Mother Yasoda, who was just crying and crying, and Krishna was crying and crying, she was just hugging him and feeding him. And then Mother Yasoda, though, wouldn't come out of her house out of embarrassment for 3 days. And finally, Nanda Maharaj had Krishna pull her by her sari, by the end of her sari, and bring her to Nanda Maharaj. So these are the type of pastimes, these waves of not just shantaras, but waves of this and waves of that, up and down, and this sanchari and that mood, and this explosion of intense love for Krishna and all these different forms. These were the continuous experience of all the Brijbasis. Continuously they were swimming and surfacing and diving deep, being pushed around by the ecstasies of their relationship with Krishna. And Krishna and Yogamaya, they're playing these things. They're playing the ecstasies like a finely tuned instrument, so that the residents of Vrindavan are just simply and constantly diving and surfacing in this ocean of bhakti ras. Krishna goes to meet the gopis, we're hearing the toll pastime, but Krishna plays his flute, and the gopis are attracted like iron is attracted to a magnet. They don't have a choice. They drop everything. They take their babies, and they take the milk pots are boiling over. They're dressed upside down. This cloth is there. Their ankle bells are on their ears. Their earrings are... They're just madly running to Krishna in their intense eagerness to be with Krishna alone. And he's playing the flute and he's pulled them there. And then he says to them, "It's so nice you've come here to enjoy the beauty of the Vrindavan forest during the full moon. Now that you have seen it, you can go home." And they're like, they're scratching the earth with their toenails, and then it comes out, their real feelings, which is what Krishna wanted. He was raising their ecstasy to the point of pranaya, where there is no holding back of what's in one's heart. Otherwise, they were so shy. And then it comes out, "Krishna, how could you do this? You know, we've given up everything for you. We love you. We love you completely." So it's always this. And then they dance with him, and then he disappears. And this is going on with Srimati Radharani. And then they're together in the Rasadin. It's just one continuous festival of variegated ecstasies, all based on the central figure of Krishna. And everyone there is completely in love with Krishna and is supporting his pleasure. So this is what the kind of thing they're continuously experiencing. And Nanda Maharaj, upon hearing the philosophy that he's the Supreme Lord, he says, "Okay, he's the Supreme Lord, but he's our son. He gets pleasure when we feed him betel nuts. He gets pleasure on our laps." And he continues, Vishwanath continues, But after he killed Chanura and comes in Mathura, everyone said, Krishna, you are certainly the Supreme Lord. And Devaki said, Krishna, it is I who am your mother. And Vasudeva said, I am your father. These are what Nanda Maharaj is thinking. And others said, and we are your uncles. And others said, we are your brothers, your relatives and your friends. And saying this, people invited them to him to their houses to keep in Mathura our son, who was the crest jewel of proper conduct. And looking at their faces, so eager to be with him and keep him in Mathura, our Krishna fell into a terrible trap. He was unable to come back to his braja. And being very benevolent, I suppose he said to everyone, I must be the Supreme Lord, the creator of the universe. Who can be my mother? Who could be my father? And who can be my relative? Just look, in Shastra it says, I reside with that person who has devotion, and I reside with no one else. In those houses where I reside, those people are my mothers and fathers. So hearing everyone talk to him like that, this crest jewel, my son of good conduct, has responded to them in that way. But though Uddhava has been very intelligent from childhood, he cannot understand the depths of my son's heart and his moods. And he has taken Krishna's words literally, as if they were the intentions of his own heart. And therefore, Uddhav, not understanding the actual situation, has come from Mathura to give us this advice. And he has said these words. But my son has said something very intelligent in those words. He has said, they are my father and they are my mother who show devotion to me. I reside in their houses. Therefore, I will send this message with Uddhava back to Mathura so that he can give it to Krishna. I will send him this message. O Krishna, it is I who have devotion to your feet. Be merciful, be pleased with me, so that I can attain you by the devotional processes of hearing, chanting, and remembering, and offering obeisances. And receiving this message, my son will walk into the assembly of the Yadavas, and he will say, O men of the Yadu dynasty, you are not able to perform the devotional activities in Mathura, but Nanda is doing so. Therefore, it is Nanda who is my father. He is my friend, and he is my dear one. And now I will leave here, and I will go to his house. This is how Nanda is thinking. And saying this, my son Krishna will return home. But at last, Vishwanath says, Nanda forgot all these deliberations due to the sanchari bhav of his dainya, or humility. So the night passed. And when the morning started, the women of the cowherd village arose from bed and lighting lamps, they worshipped the household deities. Then they began churning yogurt into butter. As they pulled on the churning ropes, and Sri Jiva explains that now Krishna again, or Yogamaya again, shows Aprakat Vrindavan, the Vrindavan that is blossoming in Krishna's presence. As they pulled on the churning ropes with their bangled arms, the women of Braja shone with the splendor of their jewels, which reflected the lamp's light, so the sun had not yet risen. Their hips, their breasts, and necklaces moved about, and their faces, anointed with reddish kunkum, glowed radiantly with the luster of their earrings reflecting from their cheeks. All was auspicious, all was beautiful. They were just chanting about Krishna. As the ladies of Braja loudly sang the glories of lotus-eyed Krishna, their songs blended with the sound of their churning, and it ascended to the sky, and it dissipated all inauspiciousness in every direction. And then Uprakat Leela is withdrawn, and they're back to Prakat Leela in separation from Krishna. When the godly sun had risen, the people of Braja noticed the golden chariot in front of Nanda Maharaja's doorway. "Who does this belong to?" they asked. "Perhaps Akura has returned." "Yena nito madhupurim Krishna kamala lochana." That Akura who has carried lotus-eyed Krishna to Mathura, the place of Kamsa. He has already done his terrible acts. Why is this chariot here? Why has he returned? They were angry. "Is he now going to use our flesh to offer funeral oblations for his master Kamsa, who was so satisfied with his service?" Their hearts were ripped open. As the women were speaking in this way, Uddhava walked to them, completely ignored their angry comments, because he was not a Akura, but he had come with messages from Krishna. As the woman was speaking in this way, Uddhava appeared, having finished his early morning duties. And that is the end of chapter 46. And 47 is an ocean that we will not enter at this point. Thank you very much. Class time is finished on time. If we can just, by hearing the Bhagavatam, by associating with devotees, by being in the presence of Giriraj in the dust of Vrindavan, by sincerely worshipping the deity who is no different from Krishna, and by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra sincerely, if we can just taste a little bit of the sweetness, get a glimpse of a little bit of the sweetness of Mahaprabhu, it said about the Sankirtan movement that he's caused the bliss of Vaikuntha to descend through the chanting of Krishna's names. If we can just take one drop, half of a drop, of from that ocean. Srila Kaviraj Goswami, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami said, that drop is enough to drown the world. So let us end by facing Giriraj and humbly offering a sincere prayer to Giriraj that he may bless us with a glimpse from a drop from the ocean of separation by looking into the hearts of these most exalted personalities who were experiencing full prema and full separation from Krishna. Bolo Giriraj Dharan Ki. Bolo Giriraj Dharan Ki Jai. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj Ki. Bolo Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Jai Sri Radhe. Jai Jai Sri